Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is Felicity Rosina. Felicity is an online coach who specializes in pre and postnatal training. Today's podcast is kind of a flip to what I would normally cover in terms of structure. So this is an episode where the first half an hour, we talk about pre and postnatal, or the first 25 minutes, we talk about pre and postnatal training and nutrition. So things I haven't covered previously on the podcast. So training in pre and postnatal, what you can, cannot, and shouldn't do, stress management techniques around pre and postnatal, and breastfeeding and the nutritional elements to consider. But we pivot out of that about 25 minutes in, where we start to talk a little bit more about calorie counting and general nutritional advice for those looking to lose weight, lose body fat, build muscle, etc. And then we transition into some really cool life questions that I would normally introduce a podcast with, but because of the topic today, I wanted to get the pre and postnatal at the beginning of the episode. But towards the latter end of this podcast, the last 15, 20 minutes or so, we talk about Felicity and how she left her corporate job and started to follow her passion into fitness and some of the things that she wished she had known back then, and how therapy led her to a happier life by defriending toxic people. So a lot of mindset things to consider towards the back end of today's podcast. I found Felicity a while back through Trisha Lewis, through Trisha's Transformation, who's been on this podcast several times, a frequent guest. And Trisha's never steered me wrong when it comes to who to follow online. And I reached out to Felicity shortly after to talk on the topic of pre and postnatal training, but we cover a wide range of topics in today's podcast. So without further ado, other thing to say, the first 10 minutes of this podcast, Felicity's microphone is a little bit choppy, and then we got it cleaned up from 10 minutes on just because of one of the settings on it. So it's not bad, but again, I'm a little bit of a sound perfectionist when it comes to the podcast as much as possible. So the first 10 minutes or so are a little bit less clear than the last 40 minutes. So without further ado, here is a fitness trainer, Felicity Rosina, on pre and postnatal training, calorie counting, and defriending toxic people. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Felicity Rosina. Felicity is a fitness trainer and online coach who specializes in pre and postnatal training. Her focus is about building a community that empowers women to be their best selves and be so confident they're ready to walk a runway. I'm looking forward to talking all things pre and postnatal training alongside all things fitness in general. Felicity, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks so much for having me.
No problem. I'm really looking forward to chatting. As I said just before we went online, we're going to be doing a deep dive today into pre and postnatal training, just because it's a topic that I haven't previously covered on the podcast, and this is your area of expertise. But before we do that, talk to us a little bit about your backstory. What kind of got you into the world of fitness and personal training?
Okay, so to cut a very long story short, I used to be a dancer. I trained at dance school, and then I worked abroad for several years. And after that, I kind of came home and was like, what do I do now? I'm still really into fitness, but I don't really want to dance anymore. So I stopped doing that. I tried out the whole corporate life, really, really hated it, and then took a step back and thought, I really enjoy personal training, so I might as well kind of give that a go as like a career. And then it kind of got to the point where I was like, I feel like I need a specialty. I need something I want to focus on, like really nail in on, because I feel like you're not a good trainer unless you're constantly learning different things all the time. So I did my pre-postnatal course, absolutely loved it. And at the time, I also had a lot of pregnant clients. So tried to get them all on board as well and was like, hey, I'm doing this. If you want some help, this and this. So yeah, kind of long story short is that just was always kind of part of my lifestyle. I really enjoy going to the gym. I enjoy training. I do a lot of sports. And yeah, I just wanted pre-postnatal to be like my focus is something that I really, really enjoyed. So yeah.
I love that. I might double back later on in the podcast about the corporate job and kind of making that transition out, because I know you've covered this on your Instagram page in terms of, you know, following your passion, following your dreams. So we may definitely come back to this. But I want to pause on pre and postnatal for the minute. Felicity, can you explain a little bit in your own words and unpack some of the do's and don'ts when it comes to training in particular, and we can take it from there?
So I think the main thing about pre-postnatal training is there's so many do's and don'ts. I mean, pregnancy is very, very different for every female. And I don't ever mean this in a, whatever I say is just a general basic kind of not, it's never one size fits all, let's put it that way. But I think the general consensus of people is that as soon as they get pregnant, they have to stop exercising. And it's all like, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this all the time. And I'm like, you can, you just have to adjust it, because there's so many different hormones going around and it varies throughout the different trimesters as well, from how much you can do and what you can't do, and exercise vary as well. Exercises, I haven't got my teeth in today. So I think it's more giving people what they can do and doing it correctly, instead of them Googling something and then they read what they've got off Google that basically says don't exercise for 9 months, and then in 9 months you've had the baby, you're really unfit, you feel horrible, you've gained weight because you've been pregnant, which is obviously going to happen, but then you're also, especially if you've been into fitness before, your body's not in the position that it was before, which doesn't help your recovery, especially women that have C-sections or they suffer from diastasis recti, which is probably happens to like 80% of all females. So I think it really depends on the individual when it comes to actual specific training. But in general, people are like, I have to eat for two. That's a complete lie. You definitely don't. Until your third trimester, you can have a few extra calories, but your body's very good at regulating itself and adjusting itself. So in general, if people want to train in the gym, I'd say, yeah, amazing idea. If you want to train at home, great. There's things that women will get as well, like pelvic girdle pain is a good example, which is basically like a really intense stabbing pain in your crotch, which is the only one. I mean, I've never been pregnant, so I can only go off what other people have told me it's like. But the thing is with that, a lot of people are just told to sit down. And if you just sit down and do nothing, it will just get worse. So you have to stretch, you have to move around, which is why it's so important to have like a foundation of like lifting weights, lifting things up and all that kind of stuff while you're pregnant, but also before you get pregnant. So if you're like, for example, me, I'm 27, probably will have a child in the next 3 to 5 years, I hope. But I would like to think that my body is quite well prepared to carry a baby, only because I've kind of implemented the training way back before I was going to get pregnant, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. You're kind of prepping your body for that when it comes. When it comes to prenatal then, Felicity, what are some of the best practices? Obviously, maintaining training, as you've mentioned, and we'll double back on nutrition a little bit later on. But when it comes to the training element, would you find that best practice is train around it, you know, listen to your body? Or what are just some of the general best practices that you would offer people in that are training for prenatal?
Yeah, I'd say listen to your body for sure. I mean, again, it's different for everyone, but some women will get really dizzy in their first trimester. Some will feel absolutely fine. Some people don't even know they're pregnant for most of their first trimester. So in general, the rules are don't push overhead, only because it raises your heart rate quite a lot and your stability won't be as good when you're pushing over your head if you're also carrying a bump. Don't lay flat on your back. Don't lay flat on your front. And if you're going to row anything, just make sure you're not rowing it like towards your stomach so you aren't going to hit your bump. That's just the general, like, try not to do that. But the rest of it, I'd say absolutely fine. You're going to have to lower the weight and the intensity quite significantly, probably about half. And as you go through your pregnancy, you can start adding more weight on if you feel like you can, or you can take it away. But it's more about listening to your body and how your body's going to respond, because a lot of people as well, because they've never been pregnant before, you don't know how your body's going to react at all. So if you're getting dizzy, you're going to have to take longer rests. You need to wear looser clothes because you're going to sweat more. You're going to get more dehydrated. You're probably training sessions, if you've been used to training for like an hour or so, you're probably going to want to cut that down to half an hour. But it's more about the movement and keeping going rather than just completely cutting off and stopping, because then you're going to start getting back pain, which is what you don't want when you're carrying a baby.
Generally, would you recommend, again, I know it's very individual based on the person, but would you say, when you say lower the intensity, is that across the entire duration of the pregnancy?
Yeah, probably more. Well, I mean, more towards the end, because you'll be bigger, you'll be less able to move. But some people are still able to run like 20K when they're like 30 weeks pregnant. And shout out to those women, because that is incredible. But I'd probably say from like week 6 or 7, you're going to have to lower it anyway, because that's when you'll start getting dizzy. There's something that you'll get, which is called vascular underfill, which is basically your veins are like widening to get more blood flow into the baby. So it takes your body quite a while to catch up with the speed that your veins are widening. That's like the least scientific explanation ever.
but breaks it down, gives the idea, breaks it down.
That's that's when you'll start getting dizzy because your brain kind of can't keep up with it. But that kind of will go away towards like week 14, 15, 16. So then after that, they might find that they're able to lift a bit more without really realizing.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. When it comes to the food side, then, Felicity, we won't spend too much on this because I know the training is kind of the big bread and butter that you cover. But you mentioned there about eating for two, and I just want to kind of pick up on that because, again, I've worked with pregnant women in the past and not my area. Again, one of the reasons that I wanted to do this podcast was so that we had a resource and potentially a person that we could send to when those inquiries come in, just because it's not what we cover. But when it comes to eating for two, do you find that that is something that a lot of people or a lot of women can, I won't say use as an excuse, but definitely it's not the set that you have to start doubling up your food because you're pregnant? Or what's been your experience with that working with individuals?
Yeah, I think it's more like if you're hungry, have it, but don't kind of force it. Because I've had a lot of people that are like, when I'm pregnant, shouldn't I be eating loads more now, but I'm really not hungry? Or if they've had really bad morning sickness, they'll be like, oh, well, I haven't eaten anything all day. I'm like, as long as you're hydrated and you're able to keep something down, quite often in their first trimester going into the second, they'll be a bit under on calories if they have been ill. So then they can try and keep it up more in their second trimester to try and even it out a bit. But there really is no need to be shoving in two meals and shoving in loads of cake, because also what you want to prevent is putting on loads and loads of weight and then getting gestational diabetes, which you only get through pregnancy, but that can have a lot of effects on your baby as well as you. So you kind of want to manage it in the sense that you don't want to overeat, but you don't want to undereat, because at the end of the day, you are still growing a child, but your body will kind of fix itself with the food and the nutrients, but maybe eat more nutritious food rather than cake and biscuits.
Yeah, you're keeping a bit more of an eye on the nutrient density of the food versus the quantity of the food. When it comes to postnatal then, Felicity, what would you find? Again, I know there's a kind of a common trend that people will have a lot of misconceptions around prenatal, like you've touched on, that, you know, training and that you can actually train around it and some of the food side. When it comes to postnatal then, do you find that's a little bit more straightforward, or are there a lot of misconceptions around postnatal as well?
I think postnatal is just people that want to do too much too soon. And I think sometimes women forget that they just gave birth. Like, if you've had a C-section, your body's gone through a lot of trauma. I can't actually remember how many layers they're cutting through to get the baby out, but I want to say it's eight or 10. So they've gone through quite significant surgery, and you're not supposed to do anything for the first 12 weeks, which if you take someone that's literally trained their whole life and you say to them, you've literally got to sit down for 12 weeks, they're like, I can't do it. But it's kind of for the greater good, in the sense that you need that time to recover. If they've had a very, very straightforward kind of textbook birth, they'll be able to start going for walks and whatever, probably a couple of days after. But again, wouldn't exercise properly for the first like 6 weeks, only because your ab wall will be absolutely ruined because you have just grown a child underneath it for the past 9 months. You kind of want to let your insides go back to where they were, because when you have a baby like inside, it kind of pushes everything up. So things like your diaphragm and all your insides are kind of in the wrong place for the first few weeks. So you have to wait for them to go back to where they were naturally, rather than if you're then forcing exercise through your body as well, you're putting so much stress under it, it's going to make your recovery time longer.
What would you recommend people do to speed up their recovery time? Would you put the focus on recovery as normal, like sleep and nutrition? Or are there any other kind of postnatal tips that you would offer in terms of getting people's recovery back? Not necessarily faster, but just effectively, because instead of stretching what should take 6 weeks into 12, which can happen to some people, what would you kind of advise for people when they're looking to get into that recovery state postnatal?
I'd say that the best thing you could do is just rest. Like, your body's going to be under a lot of stress. You're going to be sleeping terribly for at least the first 3 weeks. And I think when you try and force too much too soon because you feel guilty about not doing something, that is what will have a detrimental effect going a bit further on. Because you might get to like 6 weeks and you'll be like, oh, okay, I feel like I'm ready. You'll go out for a short walk or a short run and you'll come back and you're like, oh, I'm really tired, I really don't feel well. And then you've kind of set yourself back because you didn't feel ready before you went out.
That's really good when it comes to pre and postnatal, Felicity, but I know you work with the general population as well. Like, one of the things I noticed on your website was a calorie calculator, which is, I think, a great tool for people. So I want to pull out of pre and postnatal a little bit and touch on a couple of other topics when it comes to general fitness. What do you find people struggle with the most when it comes to calorie counting? Because I know it's such an important tool, or can be a very useful tool for people to know what their calorie intake is. But from your experience as a trainer and as a coach, what do you find people struggle with the most when it comes to actually trying to count calories?
Consistency, I think, is that's probably the word my clients hear the most, is like, you need to be consistent. And I think just counting calories in general is really useful for actually knowing what's in your food. Because quite a lot of the time, let's take Nando's, for example, you go out to eat, you eat a Nando's, you don't actually know how many calories are in the food. And you look it up and then you realize their chips are like 700 calories for a tiny portion, which is fine. But if you're trying to count calories and be careful, you wouldn't know that until you'd already looked it up and calculated it to be within your daily amount. So I think being consistent is really important. And quite a lot of people will get to like the 2 week mark and then be like, I don't want to do that anymore. And it's like, well, you have to kind of learn going forward that you need those calories. You need to kind of know what's in your food. And I think it becomes part of a like growing up thing when you learn what's in your food. I always say to people, like, try and eat like an adult. Like, you know, when you were little and your mum would be like, if you're hungry, have an apple. Like, I say that to my clients. I'm like, are you actually hungry, or are you just bored and you're pick eating?
I'm very curious with that, to follow up just with the clients that you work with, Felicity. Do you find that they have an issue with under eating or overeating, or a combination of both, in terms of a kind of a binge restrict cycle? Or what's your kind of common trend of people that you're working with in general when it comes to nutrition?
It's usually people that will go from one extreme to the other. So they'll come to me because they've overeaten. Then I'll give them a calorie amount. And then they think, oh, hold on, let me just eat underneath that and see if I can scoop under the radar. And I'm like, I can see when you're locking something in. Because what you don't want to do is, you don't want to get someone that's severely then under eating. And then, yeah, they lose loads of weight quick. Like, well done. Like, do you want a medal sort of thing? But if you're going to lose weight really quickly, it's not going to be sustainable in the long run. So you kind of want to get it at a good balance of getting them out of the binging, really overeating cycle into the calories that their body actually needs to function, to train well, to do their steps, to do any sports that they want to do, and not be hungry at the end of the day.
What's the biggest myth you see when it comes to nutrition for the general population, not necessarily the pre and postnatal? What's the biggest myth that you generally see, either online or offline, or with the clients you're working with?
Pandora's box, because I'm sure you could pick 50 different things here, but the most common ones.
Probably that you shouldn't eat carbs is one of my favorite ones. Or if I eat too much protein, I'm going to get really bulky is one of my favorite ones.
Break those down. Break. We pick either one of those and break it down for us, just because they're both massive misconceptions and myths that I've came across multiple times as well. Talk about protein and carbs for people.
Let's go with the protein one, because I had that one, someone in my inbox today, a story to me eating some protein powder, and someone was like, you can't do that, you're going to get really big. Basically, protein's good for like muscle repair, and I play a lot of tennis, and I also do a lot of exercise, so I need the protein to fill me up and to kind of keep me going, to keep me full and to keep me active, and it also helps muscle recovery. But I think when people say eating this is going to make you bulky, it's kind of looking at actually what bulky is, because me eating protein powder isn't putting me in a calorie surplus. It's also not putting me in a deficit. It's helping me and my training, which will in turn help the whole fitness as a whole. But I think people that read things online, it's the people that use YouTube as their point of reference. I'm like, oh, really? Can you tell me more about how protein is going to make me absolutely massive? Because I've tried for years and it's not happening.
Yeah, it doesn't work. If it was, everybody'd be jacked that wanted to be jacked.
Literally. But it's the same as carbs. I think a lot of people go, oh, carbs are bad for you, and they're sitting there eating some strawberries. And I'm like, you do know that's a carbohydrate, don't you? It's more that people see carb as a very basic, like, oh, bread's a carb. And then that's kind of where it stops, because there's this like lack of education in I'm not a nutritionist at all, but there's lack of education in nutrition, in the sense that people think that this is good, this is bad, that's it. It's not like you can have a bit of both and it will be fine.
I'm curious with, you know, we broke down there the protein and
carbohydrate, which I think you've nailed it, that, you know, if that protein's not putting you into a caloric surplus, it's not going to make you big and bulky. Also, there's so many other factors that need to be considered to get big and bulky, like you're talking genetics, you're talking family history, you're talking the resistance program you're following, or the training program you're following, on top of your food choices, on top of your calories. So many moving parts that, you know, protein's going to make you big and bulky just isn't true. The same as carbs don't make you fat, like, and carbs aren't bad for you, they're just a macronutrient, the same as protein or fats. But when it comes to calorie counting, just to double back a little bit, would you recommend, and again, this is your area because I haven't worked enough with people in this space, would you recommend that people in pre and postnatal track their calories? Or is it a case that listen to how your body is feeling, because, you know, you obviously have a higher priority, you know, you're trying to make sure everything goes well with the pregnancy? What would your advice be around that? Or do you do it kind of based on the person, or do you have a general philosophy or principle that you tend to apply with people?
So I'd say yes, but very loosely. So I'll break it down into pre and post because it's kind of different for both. For prenatal, I'd say track as if they were normally tracking, but I'd take them out of a deficit completely. So we just work out their maintenance calories of the weight they were when they fell pregnant. And then we'd kind of work to that baseline. And then when they went into their third trimester, we'd kind of up it to like 300 more calories as they're going into the third trimester. But I wouldn't get them to track as in every single thing. I wouldn't be like, can you just weigh out that butter? Only because I don't think they need that stress, because they're already doing enough. But as long as they kind of know the baseline that they're eating at, that's fine. There'll be more some days, there'll be less. Sometimes they'll be really tired, they'll need more food. That's kind of, I kind of leave that bit to them, and I focus more on their training. Just as long as I know they're not shoving in cakes 24/7, that's fine. And then when it gets to postnatal, so if you're breastfeeding, you need 500 extra calories. Again, ballpark number, depends for different people. But if they're exclusively breastfeeding, I'm like, okay, you can have 500 extra on top of your maintenance calories. Then if they haven't had a C-section and they go back to the gym, they can then go into a really small deficit. So I will put them probably back 200-ish calories and then still add the 500 on top. And then when they finish breastfeeding or they are then combination feeding, I will then cut that back to 350. So they're still getting the extra to be able to produce the milk, but they're not eating loads and loads and loads, so they'll keep putting on weight. So they can still have a tiny deficit and they can then get moving, get themselves back to normal again, and they'll start tracking so they can start managing what's going on again. But for the first 6 weeks after they've given birth, I just leave them alone completely. Like, that's kind of a do what you want, survive, survival mode.
Of course. When it comes to breastfeeding, do you find from your experience that it tends to speed up recovery? And I say this as somebody that's worked with enough that I have a little bit of an opinion on this, and I've seen enough research that I'm curious on it, but again, far from an expert. From your experience, do you find that, you mentioned there things like the ab wall, everything moving up, do you find that when women are breastfeeding, it can potentially speed up the recovery and they can get back training looking a certain way faster? Or what's been your experience with that?
A little bit, but it depends on the individual. I find how much training they've done previously, because if they're kind of new to training and they come to me, they've never really exercised before, when they're pregnant, we can just kind of start with the very, very basics. You can't really get into kind of how the muscles work, how the body works, because they're already under enough stress. But I think breastfeeding does help recovery in the sense that your body is kind of regulating itself a little bit better and a bit easier, because sometimes women that try to breastfeed and they're unable to, their body's going through a different kind of trauma at the same time that's trying to recover itself. So you kind of then don't want to add that pressure on. But at the same time, if they've chosen not to breastfeed, they can then scoop their calories back pretty quickly, because then that's their body being like, okay, no, I don't want to do that.
That's,
if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I think that's really helpful for people to know that based on your situation postnatal, on if you're breastfeeding or not, you're going to have different requirements based on, you know, body compositional goals, nutritional goals, etc. And I think you broke that down really nicely. You mentioned there as well about stressing, about tracking calories prenatal particularly. Do you have any stress management techniques that you like to recommend to clients? And I say that as somebody that has a whole personal laundry list of stress management techniques, but a lot of them aren't necessarily beneficial for prenatal in particular, you know, cold exposure, heat exposure, things you have to be very careful of in that condition. Like, they're kind of extreme physiological stress management techniques that tend to work for a lot of people, but, you know, asterisks here based on the individual. Is there any stress management techniques that you find work well for clients, or ones you've recommended, or even ones that they've said to you that you've passed on to other clients?
What prenatal?
Either, yeah, prenatal more so, I think. But either or, in terms of just stress management techniques in general, like meditation apps or journaling or, you know, obviously training itself is a bit of a stress reliever. But anything along those lines that you find tend to, that they can actively plug in or experiment with that might potentially work as a stress management technique, or just anything you've came across yourself?
So I'd say there's a lot of actually prenatal yoga around, which clients seem to really enjoy. There's quite a lot on different yoga apps as well. Or I would say to them, go and get a prenatal massage. So it's usually like a half an hour full body foot massage, something like that. Quite a few of my clients go for them and they seem to really enjoy them. And just walking, like, because a lot of them won't want to do any of the cold showers, blah, blah, sauna and all that kind of stuff, mainly because they can't. But I think yoga, walking, I always like, if someone's stressing you out at home, just take 10 minutes, go and sit in your car and just breathe. I know that sounds really stupid, but quite a lot of the time, a lot of people that are getting really, really stressed, I'm like, you literally need 10 minutes in silence to yourself. Go and sit in the car. Go and sit outside somewhere. If it's raining, you can just go and hide in a cupboard. Like, there's so many things you can do to manage stress in a situation that you can't really do anything about. Meditation apps, but most of the time I would recommend to my clients to try just like 10 minutes of postnatal yoga, prenatal yoga. If they're feeling like that just after they've given birth, it kind of depends on their situation at home. So if it's maybe a mother that has, let's say, three kids, for example, let's say she's got three under five, she's just given birth, and the other one's just turned one. She's not going to have 5 minutes to have to herself. It's going to be very loud, very stressful. Then I'd say to her, try and take like 10 minutes, get your kids in front of the TV. I know that's not a great thing to do, but if they're watching something for 10 minutes, she can sit there and just have a minute, especially if she's breastfeeding. She can do that while she's trying to chill if the other children are occupied at the same time.
I'm going to ask a question that I want. It's going to feel like a shoehorn question in here, but this is one of the ones I made note of that I wanted to ask you because this is your area. What do you say to people? And I've had this conversation through DMs and through messages, but I actually don't know how to respond to it. For a girl or a female or a woman who gets pregnant and they're terrified of putting on weight with pregnancy. Now, I know that sounds like a peculiar question, but I've got it more than once for people who are like, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to get so fat. I'm going to get so overweight. I'm going to put on so much weight. I assume based on your space, you would have received similar or a variation or a different wording of that question. If you have, Felicity, what advice did you offer them? Again, this is an area that isn't mine, so my advice is never going to be super helpful here, but I'm curious, what would you say in that situation, or what advice would you give?
Do you know what? That's probably the most question I get asked every time I do a question box is, why am I going to put on weight? So I think the main thing when you're pregnant is to just not weigh yourself at all. I think a lot of people forget that you're growing a child, and the child's going to weigh something. You're not just growing a ball of air. So I'd start with banning any kind of scales from the moment you fall pregnant until you're probably about 12 weeks postnatal, because until then your body is going through a lot. You've got different hormones. You're going to carry a lot of water weight apart from anything else. You're going to put on more weight because you're more stressed. But also, if you've managed your calories and you've managed your fitness levels and you still stayed active and you've done everything you possibly can, in those first 12 weeks after you've given birth, your body will bounce back quicker then you'll realize if you've put the effort in beforehand. But the number one advice I could give for someone is just don't weigh yourself at all, because you're going to get on the scales and you're going to be upset, especially probably 2-3 weeks after birth when your organs are all still all over the place. If you're breastfeeding, you're going to be full of milk. You're going to be holding a lot of water because your body is still in recovery, especially from a C-section. Your body's fighting literally every kind of natural instinct to heal itself. So you don't then want to be like, oh, I'm going to step on the scales. Oh, I put on 5 kilos while I was pregnant. If you've done everything you possibly can throughout your pregnancy to manage it, it won't be a problem 12 weeks postnatal. And then you can get back training, you can get back moving, you can eat properly again.
I love that. I think that's such great advice for people. Just ban the scales because of the amount of fluctuations that's going to come with it. Felicity, how important is the mindset side of things when it comes to pre and postnatal? Do you find that people struggle with that side? Because obviously working with you, you're giving them kind of a detailed plan on here's how you can train. Don't press overhead. Don't load through your stomach, etc. How much of it is mindset for people, that it's just realigning expectations with what's going to actually physically happen with your body, mixed with a little bit of education around what you can and cannot not do. How big or important is the mindset side of things? Or do you find that it's not that important at all? It's very much a follow the plan and you'll get the results. What's been your experience with it?
I think it's more of like a manage people's expectations sort of thing, rather than if you follow the plan, this is going to happen. Because again, very broad spectrum of anything at any point could go wrong. You could have a terrible birth. You could have something might happen to you while you're pregnant. You might have an injury, or you might, a lot of some people get different illnesses during pregnancy. So there's so many things that could happen. So you kind of have to control what you can control and kind of go with the flow. Because I think at the end of the day, you're having a baby. Like it's a lot of stress. So I don't think fitness should ever be at the top of someone's list. I know that sounds terrible coming from a personal trainer, but I think the top priority should always be looking after yourself and looking after your family. And then underneath that should then come kind of your recovery, because your recovery comes from looking after yourself. But if you don't have time to work out, if you have other children at home while you're pregnant, the things you'll be able to do are a lot less. But if you manage people's expectations and say, hey, look, you might not have got any workouts done this week, but you did really good steps and you were really good with your calories, they'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, I did do that. Or you're like, well, I mean, all your other three kids were fine and everyone's fed, everyone's asleep, you're all good. Like, you kind of survived. So I think it's more about managing expectations, kind of managing how people feel, rather than telling them, if you do this, this is going to happen. Because I personally don't think it works like that.
Yeah, I think that's why you've such successful results with people, is because of that attitude that you take towards your coaching. We spoke there about scared to put on weight as one of the most frequently asked questions that you get. And again, the advice that you offer there is very similar to my reply, in the sense that I'm like, look, orders of priority here. You're growing a baby inside you that has to take priority over, you know, a 5 kilo increase on the scales. But outside of that, it's very difficult to offer advice. Again, not my area. But when it comes to frequently asked questions, that's the one you get the most felicity. Is there any others that come to mind that you get more regularly than others?
Probably more like the ones of what can I do when I'm training. I get a lot of IVF questions, which I'm not fully sure about because I've not done that much research, but I've got a client who recently went through IVF, so I'm going to have a conversation with her in a couple of weeks to find out a bit more. Because a lot of the questions are people that are trying to get pregnant, whether it's they're trying to conceive naturally or they're having IVF, but they're scared of letting their fitness routine go to allow for them to get pregnant. So I think this is like a whole other topic, but when you're trying to conceive, your body doesn't need any more stress than it's already under naturally. So there's a lot of people that maybe, let's take a woman that runs like ultra marathons. So if she's running like 15 kilometers a day for fun, she might be weight training, she might be HIIT training as well, she might be cycling, like her body is already under like the maximum amount of stress. If she then in there tries to conceive a child, it's probably not going to happen that easily because her body's like, stop. So especially when people are going through things like IVF, there's different stages of, again, not fully sure if this is the right terminology, so sorry anyone listening if I'm wrong, but when they have like their eggplants and stuff, there's different stages of it where your body will be under more stress than the other. So I think it's hard if you're used to training to kind of come off that and actually relax. I went off on a tangent there, I'm sorry.
Not at all. No, it makes perfect sense what you're saying, Felicity. And I did a podcast recently with Orlo Flaherty, who specializes in this, in the pre-pregnancy prep plan, not necessarily the training element or the pre and postnatal, but the pre plan, the trying to get your body pregnant, either whether you're going natural route or IVF or whatever means that you're going through. So I think anyone that's in that boat, definitely check out that podcast. It'd be a really helpful tool to potentially use. You mentioned there research on IVF and just research in general when it comes to pre and postnatal. Has there been any books, Felicity, that you've read, particularly in the last, you know, 18, 24, 36 months, that have had a very positive impact on your education or knowledge around pre and postnatal? Or do you get your research through other means, through podcasts, through courses, or is there any books that come to mind?
Most of them are like online research papers. There's a university college thing, it's an American thing, that they basically write these papers on different researches they've done through IVF, pre-postnatal training. I actually have been so busy for the past 12 months, I haven't even had time to like upskill or learn other things and this and this. But actually, off the top of my head, cannot think of any books. But it's more like talking to people that have experienced it and kind of getting, I basically have a WhatsApp chat of like 40 women who are all at different stages of pregnancy, and I kind of chat to them every now and again. They'll tell me how they feel, like what's going on. And because they're all having very different pregnancies, I think it's easier to learn off people that are right in front of you instead of always reading books, listening to podcasts, reading research papers will only get you so far, because you can't actually talk to the person that's experiencing it.
Yeah, I think when you put the two together, you know, listening to a podcast like this or reading the research papers or potentially finding a book that's supportive and then merging that with people who have either been through it or are going through it is a really, really useful way. I think that's great advice across the board, you know, whether that's with business or whether that's with general fitness or whether that's with pre and postnatal, I think it applies. I want to double back, Felicity, to something you mentioned at the very start of the podcast, because I'm really curious to explore this, but I wanted to save it for later. You went from a corporate job into a personal trainer. Now, I know you've talked a lot about, you know, finding yourself and following your dreams. You know, I think you did a post, it was a while back, I think it was in July, about, you know, following your dreams, because it's awesome when it comes through, or it's cool when it actually happens. Talk about your transition from a corporate job into a personal trainer and what led you down that path. Like, why did you leave corporate?
So if I go all the way back to the beginning, when I was at dance school, when I was younger, I had this job that I always really, really wanted to work at Disneyland. It was just like this thing I always wanted to do. And it actually turned out that after I graduated, that ended up being the first job I had out of graduation. I worked at Disneyland Paris. And after I'd kind of left that, I was like, wow, that was my dream job. I've kind of done it. What now? And I was at that stage of my life where I was 21, would I have been? Yeah, I was 21. And I was like, okay, now what do I do? Like, how do I earn money? How do I kind of adult, if you know what I mean? And I am from quite a small town. And I always thought that you kind of had to go and work in the city if you wanted to make good money and you wanted to do this, this and this. So I came back from Disneyland and I was working at a pub and I was like, I really, really don't like this job. What am I going to do? Ended up working in recruitment because someone told me that recruitment is where the money is. I was like, okay, that's fine. So off I went and got a job just in a little recruitment company quite near my house back then. I actually got sacked from that job after 6 weeks because I was on Instagram in work time, which is just...
I wrote the irony of it. It's part of work now, but yeah.
Honestly, like, not lost the ridiculous thing. It's so funny. But then I kind of, after I got sacked from there, I was like, right, I'm going to make recruitment work properly. I started commuting into the city and actually worked in a banking and finance recruitment company, which if anyone has met me in person or has watched my stories, you'll know that I'm not banking and finance. I'm not very serious. I'm very completely opposite. So I actually left there. And I was on holiday with my friend and I was like, I'm going to quit. And she was like, what are you going to do? I was like, I have no idea, but we're going to find out and it's going to be fun. And the next day I booked a one-way flight to Ibiza and I did 3 seasons in Ibiza. And while I was there, it was kind of like, you can make really good money while you're working there if you work hard. So I kind of always had I didn't have the work party balance right because I was always working. I didn't really go out. And for someone that's worked 3 seasons, I've probably done less nights out than someone that goes there on holiday. But when I came back from that, I was like, it's really time to take your career seriously now. Like, I'd been personal training before, but I'd kind of never really taken it seriously because I didn't really know how to run a business by myself because I'd always worked for other people. So I kind of wrote down my goals for the next 5 years. I was like, I want to make this amount of money. I want to move out. I want to have my own flat. I want to do this, this and this. And one of them was, I want to be a fitness model. And I knew that I was in good enough shape to do it. And I just never really put myself out there enough because I'm quite shy in person, but I've never really put myself out there enough to be able to get to that point. And I didn't really know how you get from like A to B, from just going from someone that was working in Ocean Beach to someone that's now modeling for Myprotein. So it kind of happened in stages of like, started posting on Instagram, then started putting out valuable content rather than just posting photos. And I mean, photos are fine every now and again, but it's not going to help people if every now and then you're just posting a nice picture of yourself. But I think after I'd got... What was I doing? Summer 2019, I was still working in the gym and I kind of sat there and I was like, I'm really not enjoying face-to-face personal training anymore. I was like, I can help people further and wider than Southwest London and I need to do something about it. So I kind of took my business fully online, left the gym and I was like, right, we're going to have to make this work because otherwise I've got no money and I live in a flat with one other person. It's quite expensive in London, so what am I going to do? So then I flew to Australia, I flew to Bali, carried on traveling, and while I was away I kind of realized that I need to keep making that income to keep up the lifestyle that I'm really enjoying, because otherwise something's got to give and I didn't want anything to. And then came back home, and then obviously the pandemic, which wasn't great for anyone or any business. But yeah, then I started doing home workouts in lockdown. That really took off. And then, yeah, kind of from here, really. And I've been offered a contract with MyProtein to work with them, like, on a more regular basis, which is really cool. But when I stood at that photo shoot, I did it probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago now. And I stood there and I was like, wow, if someone could have told me when I was sitting in that recruitment office getting fired for being on Instagram that this would be my job now, is really ridiculous when I think about it. But it's kind of, there's a lot of hard work that goes on behind the scenes. I think it's quite easy for someone to sit there and be like, oh, but you kind of got it given to you. But people don't see how many hours it kind of takes sitting behind a screen or putting yourself out there or having meetings with people and this and this. So yeah, I'd say it's not been easy, and it's definitely still hard work. But when you kind of get to the point where you're ticking off the list of things you wanted to do, it feels really nice.
If you could go back to when you were in the recruitment office, just kind of mindset wise and kind of put your head there, Felicity, what's something that you know now that you wish you had known back then?
That you can earn money doing something else than pulling people out of jobs and putting them in somewhere else. I think it's important to know. I think maybe it's just, I was never really put into the field where you could earn money doing something other than working in an office. But I think now, especially in the past probably 4 or 5 years, there's been so many new careers that have like developed. Like Instagram wasn't a job when I was at school. So I think if I could tell myself one thing from back then, it would be like there's other ways to earn more money and you won't hate your job and you won't have to commute.
I love that. And I think that ties in very well with what I want to touch on next. Is you put up a post that I loved. It was like a mixed reel that was just showing bits of you and your life. And the caption was just finding yourself.
I love those reels.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I was like, I double tapped. I'm like, I would triple, quadruple tap this if I could. But Felicity, talk about, what does finding yourself mean to you?
I think it's kind of, you get to a point, this is so cheesy, when you get to the point of when you're an adult, when you're completely comfortable like with who you are, and like being able to say no to things without getting FOMO, and being able to kind of be in touch enough with your own emotions that you can kind of say no to things or be like, no, actually, I don't think that's right. Whereas before, when I was a bit younger, I would have done something just because someone said so, or because I thought it was the right thing to do, but didn't fully agree. So I think especially finding yourself in the sense that I am fully not emotionally stable, but I'm able to do things by myself, for myself, and kind of whenever I want to, and not rely on other people for other things. So I think that's kind of the main bit of like finding yourself, is that it's not always going to be straightforward. You are going to have, I mean, like literally last week I was having a full-on meltdown about absolutely nothing. But I think there's going to be times where it is going to be hard, but when you know how to pick yourself up from it, that's kind of when you know that you found yourself, because you can learn how to deal with it on your own.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that. That's the anxiety attack I think you're referencing, which is definitely the last thing I want to touch on. But when it comes to finding yourself, to just park it for a second, how did you get from the point where you had the FOMO, you struggled saying no, all of these things, to where you're at now? Like, what did that look like? I know this is a question that could go on for multiple hours, but was that a case of, you know, being around better people who supported you becoming the best version of yourself? Was that through consuming online information, or was that through doing lots of things that were potentially scary at one point, or rewiring your mindset around earning a living and the things that came with it? What did that look like? How did you get from point A effectively to point Z when it comes to finding yourself? Because a lot of people here who are either at ABC or, you know, GH in the middle, but they can't quite get towards the end point, or they're not sure what that path looks like. What did it look like in your case?
So I actually ended up going to therapy because I was more worried about the things that were kind of going on in my head was more like always just kind of negative thinking of like, I can't do that, or you can't do that. Or so we're going to take tennis as a good example. So I was really good at tennis when I was younger, and I, as an adult, always wanted to take it back up. I never really had the chance, but I used to get these really, really bad anxiety attacks about just signing up, or like sending an email to someone who owned a tennis club being like, hey, I'd like to join, how does it work? And I kind of sat in the first ever therapy session I went to, and she was like, remember the first thing she said to me was like, do you like yourself? And I sat there and I was like, no, I don't think I do. And she was like, but why? And I was like, because I feel like I was around so many people that were telling me negative things all the time. And we'll kind of circle back to the tennis thing in a minute. But I think because when I sat there and she asked me that question, and I was like, wow, no one's ever asked me that before. Like, she was like, you've got everything together. Like, you're a good looking girl. You earn good money. You've got a good job. Like, you kind of got your career together, but you do nothing else other than work. And it wasn't until I realized that I had surrounded myself with quite a lot of like toxic friends that I was friends with from years and years ago that I didn't want to be in my life anymore, but I was too polite to tell them I didn't want to be friends with them anymore, because I think that's a conversation that you never want to have with anyone. So I have some very, very good friends who I could literally turn around and say anything to. I could call them at any time of the day and they would always be there for me. But then there was those people in the back of my head that were like draining my energy, or people that would constantly whinge about things, or that kind of just didn't really fit in with my lifestyle. So I kind of got to the point in therapy when she was like, you're going to have to get rid of them, or it's going to keep sucking out your energy, and then nothing's ever going to change. So, I mean, it was quite savage. And I am quite savage now if someone's like annoyed me, or if someone's done something that they maybe have like betrayed my trust or something, I'll turn around and be like, look, I don't really agree with what you've done there. So kind of, I'm telling you that you've annoyed me. If you do it again, you're kind of out, which sounds really harsh, but I think at some point you have to put yourself first. So then going back to the tennis thing, I ended up joining a tennis club a couple of months ago, and it was honestly the best thing I've ever done. I walked back into that therapy session that week and I was like, you'll never guess what? I went to a tennis class, and she was like, well, I think you finally changed for the better. I was like, thank God. But yeah, I've kind of gone off topic there. But I think it's more about learning who you are and kind of being a bit brutal with it if you have to be, and putting yourself first, not doing things because you're scared of upsetting other people.
Yeah, I think that fear of being too polite to potentially defriend toxic people, I think that's one of the most valuable things that somebody can learn how to do. Like, emotional vampires is what I call those people, the people who just suck the life from you, suck your energy. And, you know, there's success leaves clues. Like, Felicity, people I've talked to in my own personal life who are successful in what they're doing have all had some version of this, where they've had to disconnect from either people that, what I call, you know, geographical friends, people who are, you know, friends because you work with them, or friends because they live beside you, or friends because you were in school with them 20 years ago or 10 years ago. Yeah. Like, they're not necessarily people that should be in your life right now, and it can be really difficult to cut those people. What did it look like for you? You know, I'm curious, because you mentioned there being kind of ruthless now with new people, and I totally get that. I'm exactly the same. But when you were initially trying to defriend, for the lack of a better word, or maybe unfriend some of those people, what did that look like? And the reason I ask that is because there's people listening to this podcast who instantly somebody jumps to mind when you mention that, or when I mention it, and they're always wondering or looking for tools on how to best do it. What did it look like for you? You know, for me it was minimizing the physical contact I was with them, and then, you know, consistently just not spending extra time with them until they kind of, I won't say got the hint, but ended up sucking energy out of other people, and then they just kind of move away from you. What did that look like for you?
So I actually, in one of my sessions, got made to draw out a tree. That sounds really weird, but I'll explain. So she was like, you have like the roots of people. So you have like your family, the kind of roots of people are the kind of people that you'd call in the middle of the night, like, hey, I need your help. And then you have like the branches, which is maybe people that are kind of like friends of friends, or are your friends, but you don't see very often, that maybe you might mingle with at like your roots, your family, friends, like events, but you don't see very often. But you might have their phone number and you might message them every now and again. Then you've got the leaves, which are like the people who you will talk to only when you're at events with the people. You don't have their phone number. You know of them. You might follow each other on Instagram, but you don't really, you wouldn't have a conversation with them if you passed in the street. You'd probably just wave. And then we had all the other people that we were calling the weeds. So it was like the people who maybe at one point were a branch or a leaf, but they've kind of grown apart, or they're people that maybe you knew from when you were at school and you're only friends with them because they know someone that might be one of your leaves or one of your branches and things like that. So we got to the point where it was like, if they're not in your root or your branch, they need to go, as in stop messaging them, don't talk to them unless it's really, really important. There's just no need for it. Your roots need to be the connections that you really, really have with people. So they're the ones you would speak to kind of on a daily basis. Maybe you're in group chats with them, the kind of people that you want around you, maybe like your circle of the closest 10 friends. And then the branches would be people that you might speak to every now and again, but they're not an essential part. And if you're never going to make that branch person a root, don't waste too much time entertaining them if they're like having a whinge at you. Because if it's not your root whinging at you and you can't directly help them, you shouldn't be wasting your energy on the person that's on the branch or the leaf.
I love that. I think that's so helpful. I did something very similar where I made a list of the 5 or 10 people whose opinion mattered to me. So I had, you know, my mum was in there, my sister was in there, my best friends were in there, my partner was in there, my daughter was in there. Like, you know, even people that of all age ranges. And I decided that these are the people whose time get my time, get my energy, who I'll drop everything for. But everybody who falls outside of that outer circle, outside of my inner circle, I'm like, you have to weigh up whether you're going to spend time with them, spend energy with them. And it just makes life so much easier. You know, it's the old analogy that you're better to have, you know, 4 quarters and 100 pennies. And I think it stands really true with the branch and leaf and tree analogy as well. Felicity, such an awesome way to finish in terms of conversation. I definitely got some from that myself, and I know there's a lot of people listening who are the same. And we've covered a whole range of things, from your expertise in pre and postnatal to calorie counting for normal people alongside the defriending of toxic people. So absolutely delighted we got to have this conversation. But Felicity, for everybody listening, where's the best place for them to reach out to you? For anyone that's in that pre and postnatal, that's looking for a coach, looking for a trainer, or anyone that wants to work with you in general, where's the best place to reach you, and where should people follow you online?
So you can find me on Instagram at Felicity Rosina. If anyone needs any help, you can either DM me on there, or you can email just contact@felicityrosina.com. I usually reply pretty quickly, so I will try and get back to everyone. If anyone has any questions, as usual, I do try and answer them all, but sometimes I might need some help or something. So if I don't know the answer, I'll find you or direct you to someone that does. But yeah.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will link Felicity's website in the show notes and her Instagram page. Go follow her Instagram page. It's just a ball of positivity and awesome vibes on there as well. So even outside of the pre and postnatal, just you have a great energy on your page. I think it was through Trisha Lewis, Trisha's Transformations, yeah, where I found you originally. And again, I have never been steered wrong by that lady. So we're another great find. So thank you so much, Felicity. And thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge and, you know, some of the stuff that we got to cover that I didn't think we get to touch on when it came to people and inner circle and therapy and the tree and branch analogy and everything along those lines. I think that's so valuable for people. So thank you so much again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
There you have it. Fitness trainer Felicity Rosina on pre and postnatal training, calorie counting and defriending toxic people. So a flipped order of today's podcast. So we basically started with the end and ended with the start when it comes to her backstory and the mindset side of things. So I think something in here for everybody, hopefully, if you've gotten this far. So thank you so much again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram stories, and you can tag myself and Felicity on there, Brian_Keen_Fitness and Felicity Rosina on Instagram. That's all from this week's podcast. Catch you all next Monday.